This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian, here with Kyle, Luke, and Kathleen. We are back with our coverage of The 100. Today, we'll be covering episode 12 entitled The Stranger. And first things first, it's good to be back on the pod talking The 100. Woo! It's been a hiatus for me personally. It's been about a month now for me.
We missed you, Tex.
Probably because
I don't know what to do without you.
Yeah, we did miss your hosting voice.
We need that energy, baby. Back.
Dare I say I am the shepherd of this podcast? Would that even be a compliment?
Please
that
call him Bill.
Already taken, baby.
Yeah, call me Bill.
That role's already taken.
So, are we ready to get into it? Do we have some initial thoughts?
Oh yeah, I mean, initial thoughts.
Fuck Bellamy.
Bellamy's back. Fuck him. Love his freckles though. Murphy's hot. More shirtless Murphy. That's in his contract, I believe, for season 7.
Oh,
and he must be But I mean, he's literally shirtless in every episode. Him and Amori are everything to me. Those are my initial thoughts.
Love it.
Kyle, you got the Twitter poll up for us.
Let's hear what the shout out to social media manager Jimmy. I'll be handling the Twitter poll today. So as always, on our at Bingetown TV Twitter account, we ask you guys after the episode to kind of vote. We'll give you three options. So this week we had awesome, which was 25% of you guys. It was good, not great, was 61%. And lastly, didn't care for it was 14%. So everyone, well, the majority of people rather, are in the middle with it. That's exactly where I sit. That's what I voted for.
I also voted for that. It just like there wasn't anything that this episode that made me go like, ugh. And, you know, they cleaned up a couple of plot holes. We've been talking about season long, which I'm going to point out. As always, I love that stuff.
Yeah,
it fixed their mistakes.
They really gave a lot of information.
Yes. Absolutely.
There was some great lines and they kind of cleaned up things like you're saying, but I don't feel like nothing like for us to really dive super deep into.
Also, it wasn't like, to that point, like as little wrong they did, it wasn't like no one's going to say this was their favorite episode.
Oh, no.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been so many strong episodes, but you can't. I don't mind a kind of bridge episode to get Clark and company back to Sanctum. I'm fucking in.
Lit last time.
Speaking of that, that's good. That'll be I'll address that a little later. That's the slice of humble pie that I've made, baked, and now eat myself. So,
yeah, personally, I liked how we had a chance to see one-on-one character interactions. I'm thinking specifically of the Jordan and Hope conversation. We got a little bit of Clark one-on-one with Octavia, which hasn't happened for a while. They had a little moment to vent, and I really appreciated that. So if this is a bridge episode, then it was a pretty good one for me, but I agree. I voted for the kind of middle vote on the Twitter poll.
And Murphy MVP, obviously.
Always. Has been since day one. Number one with a bullet.
Daddy.
We ready to go?
Daddy
yes,
Murphy.
Sir.
We are going to take a giant bite out of this episode. We're starting in Bardo. And we start out hot with Bill and Gabriel in the stone room, and they're having a little conversation wherein Bill kind of puts him on blast for a little bit, says, "You told me Clark had the key." Gabriel chirps back with, "Well, actually, MCAP told me that." And Bill is just like, "Well, you didn't tell me it wasn't true." Mm-hmm. He was like, "Shit."
No, that was good. This was Bill's, honestly, I think on screen, the first time where in front of the enemies, he's been worried and lacked a little like full confidence in his plan. So it was good to see, you know, like he's worried the flame's gone. There's no chance of that anymore. And you never see Bill like that. He's always cocky in front of cocky, calm, whatever, socially manipulative in front of the enemy. And he just wasn't like that in the scene.
Yeah, definitely. So next, Bellamy walks in and he starts off firing with the yes, my shepherds. Ugh. No, my shepherd.
So bad. Oh, I wrote all caps. Ew. I guess one thing I just want to write or say rather, what Gabriel walks past him and is like, "You look good in white," and has like a little look. What the fuck?
I think
was
it's
that?
Shade. I think he's throwing shade, being like, "You look good, you fucking traitor." Even though Gabe himself is in fucking white.
I can definitely get behind that.
Yeah,
I didn't take it like that at first, but I think that makes more sense.
Oh, I took it as shade immediately. And then Clark obviously outwardly shades him later. He's like, that's as stupid as your outfit, whatever yeah, she yeah. says. But yeah, total shade. Gabe and the boys walk out. It's just Bellamy and
Bill.
They sit down for some soup. The show's fucking sponsored by soup this season. Apparently, broth, all actually. They eat. Broth and soup.
Yeah, and soup.
I wonder if Raven made that broth.
Indra, maybe. I'm not
sure. So. I actually kind of like the Bellamy and Bill conversation because Bellamy is trying to catch Bill slipping. He says, hey, I heard about Anders. Who did we know he was known as the first disciple?
Yeah,
yeah, Anders, we get that.
Anders okay. says it. I think in the, yeah, exactly. When they're talking about, they introduce him as that on stage in front of Hope, Gabriel, and Echo. He obviously
was an important disciple. I just didn't know they called that.
So he brought that up disciple. For sure.
So, okay. From context clues, and especially this conversation, Bill says, I get woken up every 20 years by the first disciple. So it's been 1,000 years. So every 20 years, he gets woken up by either the same first disciple or a different first. I guess, no, a different first disciple
every
time. He says,
every first disciple has woken me up once. Yeah. Anders woke me up twice. So
he's basically the president.
We were pretty close, but then he's just like, that's not what you're asking. You're trying to figure out if I follow what I preach.
Yes.
And I do. I wasn't close to this guy. He woke me up twice, which is one more than most first disciples.
I absolutely love that because I felt that was something that needed to be explicitly said.
Yep.
Like how many times Bill's been waking up. Because also you got to assume one of those times he was woken up is when he did the Etheria trip, like, you know, like it leaves the door open for him to have grown through the centuries and actually learn stuff instead of just being in cryo for 1,000 years until this moment. So that was good for me.
I still would like to know how long he's awake. I mean, I'm asking a lot, but I want to know. I mean, he hasn't aged that much, so
we're not gonna touch
he's
that.
Only been say he's been alive for 10 full years added together since Callie and Reese, since he left Callie and Reese in the prequel episode. It's really not that much time.
No.
It's That's crazy.
He wants to make this last forever, essentially. And the only way to do that is if you take it 20-year chunks and you probably only stay alive for or stay awake for about a week every 20 years.
Yep, exactly.
He needs this to last forever because it's an entire universe. He's just waiting for any information on the flame. That's not going to happen pretty soon. Or if they, you know, guess the right code.
Right.
Or what have you.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, the first disciple just means it's like a self-appointed leader of like the of everyone, basically then, right under the under the shepherd.
Yeah, I wonder if that's like an elected position or what's going on with that. It's not important, but it's just curious.
Not important.
You know what I just thought of when he said Anders was like the first one to wake me up twice? When we see him get woken up, doesn't he make
you
a
again.
Comment like, oh, you again? This is surprising.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
true, good point.
I just thought of that.
Yeah.
But moving on. So Bill and Bellamy, the conversation that they have shifts to what do we do now that we know that Clark no longer has the flame. Conversation switches to Bellamy trying to protect his friends, but also offering to say, you know, I'll help you find the flame in exchange for safety for my friends.
And Bill is very reluctant at first, saying like, come on, Bellamy, there's no way we're fixing this. And Bellamy chirps back saying like, yeah, well, we have all of this technology here. Let's at least give it a shot. And I was surprised that Bill came around to it.
Well, he promises it if they find the flame, if it is fixable and it brings the last war. There is three stipulations to their safety.
Yeah. Also, I mean, this might be like you were talking about how first time we've seen him not really control the situation is I think a definite chink in his armor is when Bellamy mentions Callie. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, if she's in the flame, then we can get to her. And Bill's kind of demeanor changes a little bit. And then he
totally
agrees.
Agree.
That's the last thing.
Let's quickly just bring up those lines, though, because that I love how much the show writers decided to lean into the prequel stuff that we've given, even though we haven't seen too much. But, you know, Reese gets brought up and
Bellamy gets compared to Reese.
Bellamy does get compared to Reese. And I think he says Bill says, I think my daughter killed him. I'll never know for sure. But that's important because that already kind of puts the writers of the prequel show in a box because we're kind of happy about it, but Bill is not going to be in the prequel show.
Yes.
That's what that means.
I'm so glad that that's what that means.
Yeah, I did not want him to be.
Or does it just mean that Reese is not going to be in contact with Bill?
I mean, Reese is going to be a main character.
Right.
Of the show.
So,
Reese is going to be the first commander.
That's what I'm saying.
No, not first commander, first flame keeper.
No.
Oh, no, first commander.
He will be the first commander.
Yeah. Right.
So if he's the first commander, that would make sense that he never comes in contact with Bill again. But Bill can still be like a background antagonist of that prequel season, I would think.
I disagree.
So if that's the case, Brian, it would be just like this season, fully on Earth trying to survive with Callie and Reese and them, and then fully on Bardo, and I really don't think we're going
to
get
that. Yeah, there's no point. I mean, like, I would be interested to see how they first established the society on Bardo, but if we're getting a prequel, I don't really care that much. Yeah. Honestly.
But quick question, though. Does this mean... Okay, so if there's a chance that we do fix the flame, right, are we going to potentially see a glimpse into Reese as being someone that first had the flame in him? Is that possible?
If he does become commander, I don't think they would give us that gem of a secret in this season. Because then we would hate that, and it wouldn't be a reveal. I would also hate that. I don't think we're getting it. But I think the flame is going to be fixed, and I think we're going to get some past commanders.
Yeah.
I don't know, man, because we thought we were going to get some dope stuff from Clark's MCAP, and we got nothing.
Fuck that. Pissed.
We keep thinking, like, yo, we could get all this information by this, and they're just like, you thought.
Yeah.
You really thought. But I would like that text.
I personally did, like, it would have been cool, but I just don't see how, like, seeing Lexa through the memories would have mattered in any way, or, like, seeing...
Except to my heart and my soul.
Maybe... Well, yeah, I guess that, too, which is important to me. That's very important to me. Maybe we could have saw the calls between Bellamy and Clark. I mean, Clark calling Bellamy during the Prime Fire, which could have convinced him, but that's kind of off the table now. Because she's already been through MCAP.
Shit, I would have loved that so much. My heart would have just...
That was Jimmy's whole theory about how he was going to turn back to our side.
Yeah. We're going to get into Bellamy. We'll dissect what we think about Bellamy.
I did like one last comment on this. I liked how Bill could kind of pick up that Bellamy is doing all of this, trying to barter a deal because he still cares about his friends. And he makes a because Bellamy looks a little worried, like, is that a problem that I still have some feelings for them? And Bill's just like, don't be ashamed. The path is new to you. So Bill is an understanding cult leader. It's so weird. I want to like Bill.
He's smart, man.
Well,
he says,
I've been walking the path very, like, smooth for centuries and, like, I'm still not perfect, essentially. Yeah. And then it leads right into the Callie thing where he kind of accepts a proposal because he mentions Callie.
We're ready for the next scene, which is still Bellamy, but he is going to the jail cells visiting Echo and Raven.
Is hot immediately. Raven is not having this
in both
Bellamy.
Senses of the word.
Yeah, she is smoking hot, and also she is mad,
dude. She was us for a second. Just say it louder for the people in the back and rip this motherfucker apart, because Jesus Christ, Bellamy, fucking what? Like, you're just gonna throw your friends under the bus? Like,
okay, I keep saying about Bellamy, while we're on the Bellamy like topic, I don't like either the choice he's making in this acting. This, like, I get that he's been changed, quote unquote, but he doesn't seem like Bellamy, and we'll get to an exact line later. I can't tell if this is like he's forgotten how to play Bellamy because it's been a minute, or if he's just making a choice that this is his new kind of disciple Bellamy. But I think another issue here is that I really wish in prior seasons they had developed the Echo and Bellamy relationship a little more, because I don't know that I'd buy it anyway versus this new Bellamy coming in and trying to connect with Echo, because I think Tasia is doing great in this episode trying to convince him to go otherwise. But he's just like, I don't buy it off of him. I don't see the chemistry, but I think it's all on him. Yeah. I don't think it has anything to do with anybody else.
I didn't feel the emotional weight of their conversation at all.
No.
Except, I mean, like, what he says is kind of like that when she poses the question, like, is whatever you're talking about more important than us? And he goes, yes, that's like,
yeah,
that sucks.
But any, like, emotion I feel is from her, not him.
Yeah.
Although that would be correct for someone who is trying to buy into the disciple mentality, because he knows that emotions are frowned upon if you're trying to be a disciple. So maybe.
Right. But was 6 seasons worth of material, which spans, I mean, I'm not going to say the years because it doesn't matter because of the cryo gap, but, like, whatever, it's spanned. They've been alive together for years and years and struggled through things that no humans have ever struggled as a group
that
together.
That should change you.
That should be more changing than literally. I think it's pretty much confirmed at this point. They were only on Etheria, him and the conductor, for like
3 months.
3 months. Is that random ass vision you have when you're stuck on a cold mountain on a different planet by yourselves, like, more important than everything we've seen on the screen? Because it's not viable to me. Like, maybe it makes sense because of the off-screen dialogue, the conductor's constantly feeding him and all this convincing and stuff, but, like, Jesus, man, like, it just takes away so much from the beginning
character
of the story and all
of,
like, he's been through.
Like, and also it just kind of sucks because he hasn't really been in the season at all.
Did I get you a little bit with that?
And then he comes back, I mean, and it's just now he's not on our side.
I was just going to say, like, you guys are ready to crucify the character of Bellamy. We have seen him for all of 2 episodes so far.
Yeah, who's there, fucking follows and, that?
And this, I would be, it would be like final season ruining if this is Bellamy's end of story arc, if he is just 100% for the disciples and he's a loser now. That would ruin season 7 for
me. Okay, so I get that perspective.
I trust the 100 writers enough to not do that 100%. He's probably there right now, but I think by the end of this season, he'll be back on the right side of things.
Okay, that's where we diverge a little bit. We're on the same page with what you're saying. I agree. If he flips back and it somehow works and makes sense, then sure.
We would love to be proven wrong.
Exactly. I'm looking at it through the lens of that's not happening, because I don't think it's likely that they wasted a final 5 episode on showing why he turned to flip him back in the final 4. Right? Like
it's a tough job. Let's just say it's going to be a tough job for the writers to make us believe in Bellamy again. Yes. And if they can do it, fuck yeah. But I'm on this is shitty.
Yeah, he's shitty. Yeah.
This sucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the scene, though. Yeah. So essentially, Raven puts him on blast, says, like, tell me this is all just an act and tell us what the real plan is. And he essentially just says, no, I believe in this stuff. Raven, I know you were there when the flame was taken out of Maddie. Where is it? You know at least who took it. Where is it now? And she says, I'm not telling you anything. Says, you're going to MCAP.
Yeah.
So Raven gets dragged away to MCAP.
Can we talk about how that doesn't pay off in any way at all?
What, yeah. Like, because we don't see her in MCAT?
They don't get any information out of her. We don't see her in MCAT.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a cut scene post-production, but...
But let me just shout out my girl, Lindsay Morgan, because she's like, even if I knew, I wouldn't tell you.
Yep.
And we also get the scene of Bellamy saying, they're going to execute you guys. So yeah. Raven and Echo know that they're going to be executed because of all this.
Yeah. Too. So Raven gets taken away, and then this is when we get a little bit of a one-on-one between Echo and Bellamy, which is very important, at least from our perspective, because we need to see what their relationship is like and if there's any remnants of a possibility of the future. And I, like Kathleen, you kind of already dived into this a little bit. Everything seems to be, all the positives of this dialogue come from Echo's side.
Yeah, I like this quote she says. She goes, I trained for 5 years to pass as a disciple and another 3 to become one, all to save you. And then she goes into this bit being like, I spent all this time trying to save you and you were forgetting us this entire time. You're forgetting your friends. You're forgetting about me.
And think about that time difference. Like, Echo spent five years with Orlando, and like Orlando was a diehard disciple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he was going to be divulging all the same thoughts the conductor would be to Bellamy in 3 months. Let's think about that. That's like a 5% of the time Echo spent with a disciple. The
you were a cult leader, and I went on this pilgrimage, quote unquote pilgrimage, that I did not buy into. And then I had a dream where you approached me, showed me this light. I saw my mom. You're not telling me that you would walk out of that and be like, the shit is still completely bogus.
No, where's Clark? No, I love her. I'm not saying that at all. I think you're right.
If all of my friends... to be the devil's advocate so that we don't just crush the character of Bellamy, I'll do it because you guys have seen 1 hour of screen time of Bellamy Blake in season 7, and you said, okay, the 100 completely forgot the first 6.5 seasons. Bellamy's dead to us. He's awful. He's canceled. Don't do that.
Bellamy at this point.
Yeah. It's definitely Bellamy at this point.
Here's the thing for our fans. I don't mind Brian playing devil's advocate. And again, I would love to be proven wrong. I need to be proven wrong, even. Not want, need. But we can't not say fuck Bellamy this episode.
Yeah,
I mean, we have to.
Where we're at right now, it's fuck Bellamy.
He is making his way through each room, just burning every bridge he ever had.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Unfortunately, is.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's outside forces that are making me believe this is not the season 7 that Jason Rothenberg had in mind. I know that for a fact. They said it on San Diego Comic-Con. It's not, I mean, I'm sure it's fucking phenomenal is what it is, but it's not what they had in mind for Clark and Bellamy. I know it's not.
Yeah.
So you have to keep that in mind when you say, okay, where is this going to end? They have to do what they
Part of it is, like, we're not thinking 100% rationally right now, because we're like, fuck Bellamy, because we've been watching him with the squad for all these years, and now he's against them. But also, I completely lost my train of thought.
I seem to remember us falling into mob culture against another character by the name of Jordan. We are starting to like Jordan now. We also
does not mean we were wrong about Jordan earlier.
And it's not like we were wrong about Shane Ada.
Yeah, also true.
Agreed. I think we've been hitting the things we freak out about and get passionate about. It's not just us. Like we take in all the information from the fans, what people are saying, the dialogue that's going on, and what the writers are giving us. And it's just like, I get that there's a reason. It's just like Game of Thrones season 8. Like, they rushed Bellamy's transition from a from being loyal for 95% of the season to just completely character flipping. And I get it, but maybe he does end as a villain and maybe they do it right. I feel like I would like that better than them backtracking and trying flipping him back to good.
Before we get back in, no one loves Bellamy like we love Bellamy, you know? Like, that's why we're this mad. And the reaction from Octavia and Clark and Raven is us right now. Yeah. We're allowed to be pissed because those three are fucking
pissed.
That
is true.
I mean, it's the characters. Like, we're binge crew. We're all binge.
Listen, I think I'm getting so heated right now because I am team fuck Bellamy right here in episode 12. But like, you guys seem to just be ready to move on and just accept that he's going to be a loser for the rest of eternity. I'm not willing to go there, and I need
Me
to believe
too.
That he's gonna have that.
If there's anything the 100 has, if there's anything the 100 has taught us, is that anyone can have a second chance and make a comeback from doing something
that
seems to be like irreparable.
True.
Which is a sad thing. But Octavia had seasons and seasons to do it.
Yeah.
And full episodes.
That's
and
exactly
hours
what I was gonna.
We're out here saying fuck Blood Raina.
Yeah.
She sucks.
Okay. To move on from this one specific scene. Yeah. That spawned all of this. I think a good quote to end it on, which you might have already said, is Echo says, "Is this thing that you believe in really more important than us?" Meaning your friends, Clark and company. And he says, "Yes, it is. Yeah. This is bigger than us."
He hits her with the "for all mankind" and dibs.
Gag. Wait, no, before we move on, this is my favorite. And when we were watching, I said that this is how you know this is something Bellamy would have never said. The line is, "Are you just going to stand by and watch while they execute us?" And he says, "You know I don't want that." Meaning he would stand by and watch it. Bellamy would never. Bellamy would say, "I would never let that happen. I would die before I would watch my friends die." And like, he would never say, "You know I don't want that." Yeah. Like, that's crazy. That's different. That is a changed Bellamy saying that.
His name is Bellamy, but this is not our Bellamy.
Yeah. Right. Not our Bellamy.
I think she even... It's either her or Raven even asked, like, okay, so the plan is to get the flame, get us to the last war, blah, blah, blah. But what happens if that doesn't work out? Like, what's the plan next? And he just has no answer.
I was shook. I was like, fucking Medusa turning to stone. We're going to turn all, like, crystallize and die, man.
And the last thing I'm going to say on this issue is, well, first of all, like, when I watched this scene, I wrote down right away. I was like, Bellamy is off the table for me to end this series and say he's my favorite character.
Yeah.
He will not be my favorite character.
Yep.
Because of what happened at the end of this episode and the last episode. But I don't really know. No one really knows about what the actual details of the situation are with Bob Morley. But I want to put a little bit of the blame off the writers and a tiny bit on his actor for making the writers be put into this box where they only had 5 episodes to deal with him. So,
okay, well, first off, you said tiny bit of the blame. It's all on Bob.
Come
on.
I know, but
sure.
We're
allowed to say that. The writers are accommodating to something that was happening outside
originally,
the show.
But even though we're saying fuck Bellamy, let's just say this episode really made me miss Clark, and I wish she was in the full season because damn, is Clark good.
Oh my gosh.
Eliza Taylor is phenomenal.
Some scenes of Clark. I think Luke said out loud, like, damn, Clark is the best. Like, she is just such a badass. And
you kind of forget when you don't see her as much, you know?
Yeah.
But it took Luke saying the Bob Morley won't be his favorite character while we were watching the episode for me to say, up until the end of 6, Clark was my favorite character, which
and
is
Bellamy.
So cliche.
Those two might have been the best.
Yeah, but Clark
characters.
Was my number one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I forgot. I forget. Yeah, when they're not on the episode, you're like, all right, I love Hope. I love Echo. I love, you know, Raven, Murphy. Like, you forget about Clark, and then you're like, whoa, what a powerhouse. Mm-hmm. She's great.
All right, we can move on to
Hope. We
have
one scene to get to before we can continue gushing over Clark.
Yeah.
Which is a really nice scene, I thought. I didn't see this scene coming at all, but it was amazing. So we got Hope and Jordan in. I mean, at this point, you can't tell if it's a prison cell or not. That's a pretty big bed. So they start to have a heart-to-heart, and he is obviously coming from the perspective of they don't really know each other at all, but he's trying to kind of be like, I understand you, and he draws really nice parallels to their lives.
Well, the card that he plays is that essentially they don't really know anybody other than themselves and their respective parents, which would be Monty and Harper and Octavia and Diozo, of course. And the quote that he says is, "We've heard stories about the people that are now around us, but
they're not our friends. They're like legends to us.
Yeah. That's, I just fucking love that so much because when, once he said it, it's such an obvious dynamic that I never thought about.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked before about how, like he says, I was raised alone on a spaceship. You were raised alone on a planet. We've talked in depth before about these people can't be normal. They don't know anybody. Yeah. I'm like, of course they're going in like wacky directions. They don't know. Of course, Hope is diving and putting the Gem 9. Like, she doesn't know. But this is excellent acting by Shelby Flannery and Shannon Cook. Like, this is really
this
good.
Is Jordan's best delivered dialogue of his entire series.
The piano, when Hope is talking, it was playing on my heart. Like, the keys were inside of my heart. Literally, I was like, this is really good. They're both dealt such shitty hands, and now they kind of have to move on. I mean, at least both of them were fine until Hope was 10, until Jordan
got pussy.
Yeah.
Dude, Bardo Jordan is the best Jordan. Yes. He's just been slam dunking it since he's gotten to Bardo.
He just needed a change of scenery. So it happens to everybody.
Alpha Jordan, bottom tier.
Yeah.
Bardo Jordan, let's get it.
Yeah. Jordan's best line, though, is she didn't do it to save your life. She did it to save your soul, which is deep.
That was deep. That was like some A-plus philosophizing he hit her with.
He is a zen-ass boy.
And also, it's truth.
Also, just because I didn't get a chance to talk about it, RIP Dioza, she probably from season 5 on might have been my MVP of season 5, 6, 7.
Maybe not 5. She was an enemy in 5, but totally. Yeah.
And she was a great enemy.
I can respect that opinion.
Is Shade Hayda the MVP of this season?
Murphy.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, no, you're right.
That was easy.
Villains can be the MVPs, though.
Oh, yeah.
But Dioza, I will say she was a great villain because like Kane trusted Dioza, and that held weight. When Kane trusts someone, to me, that held weight for me. So it wasn't like she was doing all these evil. I mean, she was, but again, like we said on Sachin's episode, everyone's the protagonist of their own story.
Kind
of.
Except McCreary. He's a bitch.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. McCreary was like the irrational, just kill everybody slasher type. Dioza was more level-headed, just conniving, also very gruesome and violent, but she was more...
Yeah,
there were more layers. Is it?
I just thought of this as you were saying that. That's kind of like are McCreary and Dioza like a decent parallel to the opposite gender reverse, but Nikki and Hatch
and Nikki. Yeah, yes,
exactly.
That's a really good thought. I didn't realize that until you put it out like
100%.
That.
100%.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to talk about the Jordan quote that you just said about saving her life versus saving her soul is while by doing that, Dioza is making the assumption that she knows that the pain that Hope would have experienced from committing mass murder and killing all those innocent people, which obviously Dioz is familiar with, and the pain is huge, but she's almost gambling that that would be worse than Hope killing her own mom. Because I feel like both of those emotionally distressing as fuck.
Yeah, but I think it was a good move because they made it a point in the episode. I mean, I guess a couple scenes before Dioza's death, like when Dioza pulls her aside before they go to Levitt for the first time, and she's like, "Yeah, like I was a terrorist. I killed all these bitches for no reason, and I regret it." Like that's what she was coming from. So I don't think it was even an option in her head.
Yeah, I would assume that she was just. It's way easier for Hope to come to the perspective of how Jordan basically so cleverly laid it out for her that like there's no way you can come back from what she like if she had killed everybody she couldn't have come back from that.
Love 100%. Dioza.
Do I ship Jordan and Hope?
Oh, I do. The first thing I said is, "Oh my god, are they gonna bang?"
I'll fuck around and ship them.
But like,
Hope was laying on that bed provocatively, baby.
She's an emotional mess. Yeah. Jordan's a gentleman. Monty and Harper are his parents.
I'm joking, would not but I just love Hope so much.
No, that could absolutely work, but it's got to be an epilogue, like time skip.
Yeah.
This is where we are now, and they're together. I'd buy that in a second.
I ship them just as best friends, too.
Hey, man, if they could make Bellamy go from a hero to the most hated character in an episode, they can ship Jordan and Hope in an episode.
Yeah,
boom,
we can.
I mean,
ship anybody.
They gave the background already. Their experiences are so similar. Yeah. I like it a lot.
It's logical.
And just so you know, I was pissed at Bellamy before he came back because we were pissed because he was not there.
Yeah.
But moving on.
Last thing I want to say is this is just another instance of the 100 writers doing the most with secondary characters. We got introduced to Hope very end of season 6, but really season 7. She's only been in Jordan with season 6 and 7. And this was the scene that we enjoyed most in this episode, at least.
I think it was the scene I enjoyed most for both characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were awesome in it.
But just that they can make us care that much about characters that they introduce last season or this season is very impressive to me. And I like that. So moving on to the next scene, same deal. Clark and Octavia in their cell, they get a heart to heart. Oh my gosh. They get a heart to heart before Bellamy comes in.
Power squad, these two. Jesus. Oh my God. I could have watched a whole episode of them two just talking in that cell.
It was impactful just seeing them alone on the screen together. Yes. I was just like, wow, it's been a minute.
Clarktavia, baby.
Where we've been, where we've come from the beginning.
I just love the names of the shit. It's just my favorite thing.
Yeah. Clarktavia, that sounds so good.
I think it's a thing.
So it basically starts with O's kind of laughing and Clark's like, why would you ever be laughing? Nothing is funny. And she says, I finally understand you.
I love that line.
It's been a long time coming.
That was great.
Clark is the most like misunderstood person on this show because nobody could possibly understand the weight of her actions and what she has to do. She bears it so they don't have to.
This is the second realization of that this season because Raven had that in what's the name of it? Nakara.
Yeah.
She was just like, damn, I get it. All right. Yeah, I like you again. We're in the home stretch, now Octavia's just like, damn, I get it. We like you again.
Dude, that's why during my rewatch, I'm just like, fuck everybody that gives Clark shit because she is the best. Mm-hmm. She's the best. Yeah.
O says, you have Maddie. I have hope. I'd do anything to keep her safe. And then I like the bit where Clark says, how long were you on penance? Because I keep thinking, none of these people know anything about all this time dilation. Octavia's literally now like 11 years older than Clark.
Yeah,
all of a sudden.
Just casually goes, 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years, good ones. And then she starts crying and says, a couple of days ago, she meeting Hope was our little girl, and now she's messed up like the rest of us. And man, it's fucked up to be messed up like a person on the 100.
That's the only, like, these are the only people ever in the history of anything that could just kind of roll with the fact that a couple days ago Hope was a little kid and now she's kind of like a woman who's out here murdering people and they just roll with it.
Oh dude, that's going to be highlighted in a couple
seconds.
We'll talk about what Bellamy says.
Yeah, what Bellamy says is perfect.
Wow, so awesome.
But,
okay, so that's Bellamy comes in. Are we ready for that?
Enter Bellamy. Yeah,
Bellamy comes in and Clark comes out hot, says, I've been racking my brain about how you telling Bill that I don't have the flame helps us. And you know what I came up with? It doesn't.
Fucking doesn't.
Boy, doesn't.
She's just like, what are you doing, dude? I'm looking at my best friend and I can't even recognize him.
Such a good line, honestly. Like Clark, how she delivered it too. She was like, what the hell is wrong with you, man? Yep.
I honestly love Clark calling Bellamy her best friend, even if the follow-up line is, and now I don't recognize him, but I still love him. Like, oh, he's your best friend.
You know
friend.
That's going to piss off the fandom, too. Yeah, people are going to be pissed in the fandom that she said best friend.
Yeah.
Was it Bellark? Right?
Bellark,
yeah. I like the names, baby. I want to be consistent.
Yeah. So then Bellamy kind of says to her, like, I had an experience that changed me to my core,
Something that explains why we're still here and where we're going.
Yeah.
And this is just, you just picked up that quote mid-quote.
I know, right? That's lit. I stuttered.
This is important for us to talk about real quick because like in our last episode, Jimmy laid out like all the foundation and all the evidence of the possibility that there was a lot more to Bellamy's experience on Etheria, like whether it be visions, whether it was planned by, you know, Bardo and Bill and all that. But the reason this is important is because they make it an emphasis to flash back to the actual episode. Mm-hmm. And what we know for a fact is that there is no extra visions that we didn't see, because what the fandom and what blogs and everything is talking about is when Bellamy sees his mom and he's in the room with the transcendent lights, he touches the light and then it flashes right to when the storm passes. And people were thinking there was a chance that there was an off-screen vision when he touched the light. And that's off the table because of how Bellamy delivers this scene, saying like, mom was there, like I touched the light and the next thing I know the thing's gone. So I think that's off the table. Simulation's still there, I hope.
All it took was one vision.
Yeah.
He's easy. He's an easy mark, bro. Yeah.
Too easy,
I got some real estate in the fucking Bahamas to sell you. Some fucking timeshares. He'll fucking buy them right off me.
Yes.
Well, he said, the shepherd led me to her, meaning his mom. There was a light. It was beautiful and warm and peaceful, and I chose it. Now, that line is super lame to me, but I do like the fact that he said, I chose it. Like, he's not saying, this happened to me, whatever. He's saying, I looked at this and I chose it. And I'm like, dude, you are brainwashed, fam. Like, so
it just goes back
brainwashed.
To, we talked about it on the last episode and he mentioned it here. He said, the shepherd got like mom was there. The shepherd guided me to her. And it's like, why the hell was Bill there?
Yeah.
Why would Bill be in his head, in his vision?
I think it's gotta be a simulation. They had O's mom from O's memories from the MCAP. It's gotta be that.
Okay, but let me counter with this. If it wasn't a simulation, then it was real. And does the disciple stock start to rise?
No, the opposite. I think it gets shittier.
Just in general, you mean?
The whole idea about of the simulation theory is that this has been planned from the beginning to brainwash Bellamy, basically to convince Clark and them, which is why in the first scene of the first episode of this season, when they're trying to when you see them, the disciples taking Bellamy, that's like the first scene of the season. And
right.
Why did they care about Bellamy? And people think like they're trying to connect the dots to like, this has been a plan forever for the disciples to grab Bellamy, convince him, use it to get information out of Clark, convince her to use the key for them to.
Yeah, because technically season seven started and O had already been an MCAP. So Octavia had gone through her MCAP at that point. So they would know that either Clark and Bellamy have reign all over everybody. And Bellamy specifically, when it's Octavia, it's Echo, it's Raven, it's every single person stems from Bellamy.
Yeah.
So it has to be a simulation or else I'm really upset.
I love everything about this
if it's
Bellamy decision, if it is a simulation.
Yes.
If it's not, it's Bellamy's weak-minded, and I don't know how else to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Totally. But this is the part I loved. The scene progresses, and this is honestly a really hot line from Bellamy. He says, "If I told you that the AI that destroyed the Earth was storing our minds in the City of Light, would that be any more believable? What about a group of astronauts turning themselves into gods by transferring their minds into the bodies of their own followers in order to live forever?" Like, recapping the past few seasons, season saying that season, is so funny.
Insane on paper.
Yeah, insane. Yeah. And then Clark literally says that. He's like, yeah, we've had our dose of crazy.
Yeah. Okay, a little bit of a fourth wall break. It was nice.
I admit, but I am not, even if all of like what you're saying is true, I'm not letting, like, helping that man start a war. I'm just not. War.
She's on that Becca Prom Hata stuff.
Yeah. That good.
And that Cali stuff, too.
Yeah.
Bell's asking Clark for help finding the flame. Gets responded with a nice go float yourself.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's deep.
And that earns her a trip to the MCAT.
That's good.
Yeah. I had a huge. Was it weird to anybody else that, like, the lack of Octavia and Bellamy dialogue in this scene? Because I was like, why are they not just as important as Clark and Bellamy?
I think. They're saving up. There's going to be an epic showdown between these two.
I hope so. I did write, though, that it was interesting. I would have never guessed that we were going to get like a Clark and Octavia versus Bellamy showdown of like a knockdown, drag out argument. Like you said, Octavia's not a huge part, but she's involved still. Just like
she says her quips, but yeah, I just want
it's
a little more.
It's just
dialogue.
Crazy to see her and Clark against Bellamy.
Yeah, I totally started talking about Octavia during the Echo and Raven scene. Why did nobody stop me?
I mean, she's always
it's
on
like
my
Joe
mind,
Juice.
Too.
I thought JoJo's made me talk about Octavia when she wasn't even in the scene earlier. But.
Bellamy walks out. Him and the conductor have a nice reassuring moment where the conductor, Bellamy's just like, they don't believe me. They're not following us. And he's just like, follow the path, whatever. I don't know.
For
the
all conductor mankind. Bellamy googly eyes at each other, man.
I paused and I tried to count his tattoos and it looks like he's a level 10.
Conductor?
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm happy you did that. I also think haven't looked or read anything yet, but I'm sure that this is going to span a huge, what are we calling them? Bellamy and conductor ship?
Kellamy.
Oh, the ships. Yeah.
I did see a little bit of this after last episode, but I'm sure it's taken off now because they have this little bit of an embrace. I was like, wow, the fandom's going to run with this.
I was running with it.
Shout out Jimmy, the OG Kellamy stan.
Yeah.
Yo, he looks good cleaned up.
He does look good. I was like, who gave him the right to be handsome?
Yep.
What the fuck?
The shepherd did.
That's true. For all mankind.
Yeah, for all mankind.
Yeah, we need some fucking daddy serving the looks on our side for all mankind.
Yeah. God.
How are you going to convince people to come on with you?
Wait, what?
You need some daddies on your side.
Oh, yeah.
She's not into it. Next scene we have is Clark, Bellamy, and Bill in MCAP.
And the conductor.
Oh, yeah, the conductor is there. You're in. Yeah, whatever.
Bellamy.
Anyway, so they're all in MCAP. They're MCAP and Clark.
I love the black blood. Every time I don't know why I'm like surprised by it. I'm like pleasantly surprised every time she's bleeding and it's black. I'm like, yay. I just like it. It looks so good. But she is not having it. She's fighting it. She's almost hemorrhaging out. Bellamy says she doesn't know. I don't think she knows. And Bill's like, she knows or else she wouldn't be fighting. And I'm like, you don't know Clark very well, because even if she didn't know, she'd be fighting it. So
yeah. But anyway, after they're not going to get anything out of her because she's Clark. She's going to fight to the bitter end. And mentally strong. Bill says, you know what? Send the first of her friends to penance. And right at that, Clark was just like, wait, I'll take you to get the flame as long as my friends are safe.
Yeah, this could be 100% on me, like all my fault for hyping up this situation of Clark and MCAT, but I was disappointed by this scene.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been an entire episode worth of good stuff.
Yeah, I just like no legit memories. Like, we didn't get a single view of a single memory, which I just
that's kind of the point, right? She didn't even let the neural link connect. Yeah, that's
God, look at that. Look at the difference between her and Bellamy. Just like the strongest willed human versus Bellamy, who just
which I thought, post Pike, I thought Bellamy was up there. Until obviously this season, like
I mean, Clark literally had another person take over her body, and then they fought inside of her brain,
she's
mind space.
Beast.
She is Clark such is a beast. R.I.P. Josephine, we love you.
I still loved it for sure.
What a great
I wish
story
she line. Was in anybody but Clark, and she could have came out on top, but not Clark.
So the next scene is everybody is in the stone room, but now we're gonna go to Sanctum, right?
Yeah, we're going to pick back up on this because this is kind of where Sanctum and Bardo converge. So let's jump to the throne room of Sanctum. Is this the first scene of the entire episode?
Yeah, this is the first scene. It starts out with Russ Haida is kind of passing judgment on just what's left at Sanctum following his overthrowing of the status quo. And the first people that are bending the knee we see are Murphy and Amori, and they're still just shooting the shit even while they're bending the knee.
Such a strong Murphy and Amori episode. I mean, they are just running Sanctum as mom and dad.
It's amazing. It's
excellent.
Because of how strong episodes for those two, haven't they all?
The greatest love story of our time.
Am I the worst for saying that Murphy still carries like Amori? Like he absolutely needs her to have a strong scene. She kind of needs Murphy there.
She held her own, I think, in when she was trying to bring the children of Gabriel together with her parents. I mean, it's not, I agree that they're better together, they're a team, but I think Amori I think she's binge crew. I think she's solid and dope.
Yeah, Amori's been awesome since she's landed on Sanctum. Like, she's been amazing.
So ever since she was in space with them for the 6 years, she's come out and, like, Raven's teaching her how to be essential, basically. Mm-hmm. So,
Luke, Amori is officially binge crew, yes?
Yeah. I'm in for Amori being binge crew. Cool. She hasn't done a negative thing, in my opinion, in a really long time.
You in the preview said that Amori was binge crew over Echo, right? I think that was your stance.
Oh, I totally was against Echo being binge crew from the preview, and I kind of still stand by that. Especially,
well, it changed.
I did accept her, probably because of the hype of you guys. Yeah. But now I'm fucking,
I think Echo is one of us.
Whatever.
One of us.
She just sucks in the rewatch, too. This is the problem. I expected to like her at some point. Yeah, but she's
as gay. I mean, I loved that they gave Echo that backstory of how she was kind of a little timid girl and had to kill her best friend named Echo and took her name. Like, awesome. You need that kind of Queen Naya just raining hell down on these kids. I mean, of course you're going to be fucked up. Mostly everybody on the show has been raised fucked up. Mm-hmm. So you got to give them a little leniency.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay, so Murphy and Amori essentially bend the knee. They say, we want to live. Russ Haida says, well, the palace is mine. Where are you going to live? Amori immediately says, the workshop. We'll take the workshop, which makes sense because they are currently harboring fugitives in the reactor room. Yep. So they want to get on top of that. That would be a great place for them. And Russ is kind of just like, whatever, be gone. Like, get out of my sight. Next people to stroll up is two factions that we're familiar with. It is Nikki and the Allegius Four criminals, as well as Nelson and the Cogs.
His name is Sachin.
Yeah.
Apparently.
We knew apparently. That.
We did know that.
From
we knew
the
that.
Cogs
we knew
episode.
That.
The
reunification ceremony.
He's Nelson. Come on.
So they bring the Cogs in on one side and Nikki Bang Bang and the Allegius crew on the other. Nikki Bang Bang goes first and is like, all right, what if I don't? And she's like, I'll kill you. And she's like, all right, cool. You're mine. I'm yours. Whatever.
You're mine.
You're mine. Finish him.
She does a good job of how she states it. I kind of don't remember. She's like, the criminals of the Allegius Four
are your criminals and the thieves.
And the thieves.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then we go over to Nelson. Does he call him Nelson?
Yes. He says Nelson.
Nelson, he corrects him.
Which is cool because Sachin, shout out to Dr. Jackson.
Yeah, love that. Love that. It's great. This is an intense
interview him?
We did just interview him. You should check that episode out.
What a good interview.
On Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to podcasts. Wow.
Binchtown TV. Yeah. Dr. Jackson on Binchtown TV.
Shout out.
Wow.
Wow.
Shameless plug.
All right, I'm gonna take this over because Nelson slash Sachin is my boy. So Russ Hayda basically gives him the ultimatum, essentially kneel or die. He responds with, "The children of Gable swore an oath. It's better to die free than to worship at the feet of a false god." So they all refuse to kneel. And Russ Hayda actually compliments our boy, Nelson. I'm going to keep calling him Nelson. And says that basically you stick with your principles and those people that follow you stick with you. That's the sign of a good leader. There can only be one leader in Sanctum.
Damn.
Yeah.
And then he kills everyone around him. Just pulls up with the glizzy, with the stick, takes them all out. And it's just Nelson left alive. And right before Nelson dies, underneath his breath, he says, "Death is life." And then bullet right through the brain.
I mean, first of all,
he screams.
The scream. I like
the scream is epic.
Yep.
An awesome warrior's death, even though he's not a warrior. He's honestly like a man of peace.
He's a leader.
Yeah. They're not violent, the children of Gabriel.
And let me say this, because I said this when we were rewatching it.
Against the primes. But
yeah,
that's
like when we showed up, they were kind of...
Well, they're like guerrilla warfare, like forced into this life.
Sure. Yeah. But let me just say, Shane Hanna with a gun was tripping me out. Yeah. I'm like, this seems unnatural. A grounder with a gun just killing everybody.
I said this when we were watching it live or in a rewatch together, but and I also brought this up. Honestly, the first couple episodes that Nelson had lines this season, like... The Children of Gabriel faction was so well written in the sense like they didn't fall into the typical sci-fi fantasy tropes. Like they stuck to what they were. And especially Nelson himself, like while he swayed a little bit back and forth between following Nikki or Shade Hate or whatever, it still made sense for his character and for what the Children of Gabriel believed in. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because now the Children of Gabriel are essentially wiped out. It was like a complete character arc, quote unquote, for their faction that was just incredibly well done for being such a late game addition.
Yeah, I really, really like Nelson as a character.
Yeah.
Shade Headed compliments him here for all the reasons why I like him. I just really like what he's about. And like Kathleen said, I mean, what a death.
And it makes sense why he was Gabriel's number two. Like it all made sense.
A sad death.
Yeah, epic. Raising the
very
tensions.
Epic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it honestly didn't make me sad. It made me go, damn, what a good death.
Yeah.
And that's just as good.
It was a good one. He was unfortunately expendable, but at the same time, it was an impactful death. I was just like, Nelson's gone. That sucks. Yeah. Good death, though.
I texted the chat immediately and was like, well, fuck me.
Yeah dude. My mouth was open when he was ripping that machine gun.
He was crazy.
I was like, this is awesome. It just makes sense.
Yeah, maybe we meet again, Nelson.
Yeah. All right. So the next time we get back to Sanctum, there's like a little bit of Bardo in between Back to the Throne Room Part 2.
Is every Sanctum scene in the same room?
No, because there's the two. There's the two
machines.
Right.
You're right.
So this is where Shade Hayda is talking to, I think, Knight, right? And he's very aware that there are other hidden faithfuls. He knows Maddie's.
Knight says everybody has either been killed or bent the knee, and Russ says everyone we found.
Exactly.
Because there are still some big names that they haven't found, and he immediately goes to Maddie. We got to found. Does anybody know the Maddie Combe?
Oh, I had it my last week.
Does anybody have it?
Complete crew or something?
It's like something cool. It sounds great. Awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
It's second time we ever saw it. Second time we ever saw the full name.
I like that he says it like
that. None of us wrote it down. No. It's like we're not.
Yeah, I'm a little ashamed because I'm a big fan of Trigata slang.
Yeah. He done fragged them up.
Yeah, Russell stayed that
way. So it's important to note that Indra is still in this room. She's kind of like dealing with all the dead bodies. So Shade Hayda starts talking about bringing up. I think he's the one that brings up Gaia, right? Or is it Knight? One
it
of the two.
Knight that says we're also still because Russ invites Indra into the conversation. Knight says we're still looking for her daughter Gaia. She last we saw her, she was in the woods, like with Clark and that party. Which, oh my god,
that's insane.
They
think that
they're in the wilderness.
So the time dilation is screwing with everything because they think they've just been in the wilderness for like 2 days. That's it. My God, they've been on different planets for months.
Some of them have lived quarters of lifetimes. Some of them have had like.
I was like, that's really cute that you think they're in the woods.
It's
like,
adorable.
That's so cute. But it's Luada Clearon Crew. Awesome. Maddie Combe Luada Clearon Crew.
Cool. Nice pronunciation. Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Essentially, about Maddie, though, he says, today they hide, tomorrow they come for revenge, which is something I know Luke at least likes about him. He's not just someone to forget about small pawns that got away. He is kill them all, no loose ends. We got to get these people.
Very good, clean writing. Like, it ties up the loose ends that would make sense if you were a legitimate dictator like him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Kyle, did you have something?
No, I was just, he likes the chess. Yeah. He's a chess player. Oh, so sure. He knows the importance of every piece.
So Knight gives Shadehata Maddie's book of drawings, which is big. And then Shadehata looks at it and says, I saw this when I had the flame.
Yeah. Which is awesome because we brought that up way like big long ago line. Saying like, shouldn't Shadehata have these memories that Maddie is? Good job, writers. That's all I got to say.
Love it.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, this is kind of leading a little into, I mean, I know Jimmy loves the book and thinks that the book's going to be big, important. And now that Russ Haida has the book and, you know, has said that he has seen the drawings in the book as well in his own head, that it's going to still be an important point.
It opens the door to him being important to getting the last Judgment Day code in the stone. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Shade Haida versus Bill is going to be so funny.
Fucking let's call me J.R. Bourne, baby.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going to be head to head.
So.
Man.
Yeah, and also we get the second mention of Gaia, who's been missing. When Indra gets invited into the conversation, Russ Haida says, well, where's your daughter? Where's Gaia? Indra says, I don't know. Indra's a badass, she's just like, I don't know.
Well, she's a badass, but this is just, it's so unlike her to just be like, okay,
It's hard to watch her be.
She's to me. She knows what that means. She is right now a respected subordinate of Shade Haida.
But
Shade
we
Haida
also,
puts respect on
just for like 1 second, talk about the fact that like everyone thought there was going to be some sort of residual physical harm to her after the conclave. People thought she was dead for a second, which was obviously not true.
Yeah.
And it's like she's completely fine.
Yeah.
I was like,
well, here's the thing. Amori, like going back to Indra and her possession, Amori, when Nelson was walking in, looks at him and says, bend the knee so you can live another day. I think Indra knows, because I'm just trying to play devil's advocate, because I was so annoyed that they didn't just kill Indra, because she would have never bent the knee. But I think now that I'm on the other side of it, I think Indra knows that she has a greater calling and people to protect and all of Sanctum to protect. Versus bend the knee and get
we'll
killed. Don't
we'll
bend the knee and get killed
ends.
In your pride.
I think she's going to die to save Gaia.
I hope Indra's the one who kills Shade Haida. That's my fantasy pick.
I could see her
like
ending as the commander.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be about that. And she would
Call
be
Haida.
The most righteous commander. Commander.
Commander.
The commander. Flamekeeper? No.
We should have done Sanctum first. This is much lighter and funner. People are going to listen to the Bardo part and be like, they hate each other.
We had to, though.
That's true.
We did get into Bellamy. We were digging into
It's a contentious topic.
Whatever. Yeah. What you going to do?
We're obviously passionate, so it gets
we're
out of hand.
We're best friends. Yeah.
Speaking of passionate, we get a little more Nelson. So Indra is basically ordered. Well, okay. Yes. So Indra and Triku are ordered to basically clean up all of the dead children of Gabriel bodies, and there's no short amount of those. So she actually walks up to Nelson and closes his eyes and hits him with the "your fight is over," which I like that she put some respect on Nelson. I like that a lot. And then she looks over and notices that it's young Jasper, right?
Yeah, Luca.
Mini Jasper is still alive. She whispers to him, basically, stay dead. Walks over to him.
Stay
down. And walks over to him and drags his body out of the room.
Totally did not. I thought it was a girl. Like, I did not know that was Minnie Jasper.
He's got a pretty face.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only really noticed it on that.
Maddie's boyfriend in real life.
Yeah.
Young
honestly, Sachin like confirmed that for us. Don't you think?
He was talking a little shit too. He was like, "You better stay in his place."
Yeah, he's the big brother of the
exactly.
cast. He's like, "Minnie Jasper's walking up. You got to make
sure."
And then
the last little important part of this scene is that Russ, Knight, and Nikki are all having a little bit of a discussion in the background while Indra is dealing with the bodies.
And I kind of remember, like, when I was watching that scene originally, like, he calls over Nikki, and we get nothing past
we
it.
We don't get anything.
Which we do find out eventually.
Yeah.
It's going to be them sending her to follow Indra.
Correct.
Yeah.
Next scene we get is Murphy, our boy Jerry.
Yes!
It is Jerry and the anti-Jerry who is Trey.
Yes. Dumbass Trey, dude.
It is the light versus the darkness.
I don't think that I smiled wider at any point in this episode that when Jer pokes his little head out from behind the door. And I was like, let's go.
Oh, call you Jerry. All right, Jer.
Yeah. Jer Bear is alive and well.
I love him.
We love you, Jer.
So, essentially these two are kind of leaders of the people that are in the bunker, I guess.
Yeah. So Murphy got them
medical supplies
and they're starving from Jackson, from Dr. Eric Jackson,
who we interviewed.
And they're like, where's the food? He's like, all right, listen, he's trying to get us bread, relax. So, but I like Jared looks at him and is like, I was right to believe in you, because he believed in him thinking he was Daniel Prime, and then it's still carried over because Murphy, everyone's proud of him this episode. Yeah. Everyone says it.
Yeah,
Trey
tries to kneel like a card-carrying member at Weenie Hut Juniors, and Murphy's like, bro, he's gonna kill you either way. Like, you can't do that. I hate Trey.
And it's good that he's still alive, because I'm hoping he's going to have a bad death next episode, which I think he will.
We got a little bit of a sneak peek.
The trailer did not look promising for Trey, which is awesome for us.
So then they have this little talk. Murphy makes his way up to Amore, and Amore is like, you are fucking sexy. Like,
You're not worried about yourself. And I find that incredibly sexy, right? Amore says.
Me too.
For the second time this season, right before they're about to bang, we get a knock on the door. Someone's interrupting
them. Yeah, we don't get much actual making out with these two.
Didn't we get them in the palace together hooking up? But they're never actually kissing.
It's more just them finishing.
Raven walks in.
Yeah.
And they bang off screen all the time.
Well, yeah, but they tease us a little bit.
I'm just saying, I want more on screen. Yeah. Give me some on screen.
But we did got more shirt off, Murphy, than you have gotten all
series. It is truly something to live for in these dark, dark pandemic times.
My God.
I'll look at shirtless Murphy every dang day.
I don't think we said it real quick, just a flashback before we move on, is that the reason that Murphy was telling Trey and Jared that was he specifically says, like, we're just stalling. Because he's in the same mindset that Clark and Gaia and everybody are in the woods. So he's like, we're just stalling until they get back. Anyway, flash to the sexy time getting broken up by the knock.
Well, there's a very nice Murphy quote here. When he's about to put that work in, the bed is like a little creaky and breaks a little bit. And Amore's like, it's different from the one, or it's no castle. And then he says, even a cave garage with you, all of them are castles.
I literally have, and with that, I will never settle for anything less. In my and with that line,
we just love to watch their love.
Yeah. Oh, love it, man.
The person knocking at the door, interrupting them, is Indra with her wheelbarrow, which has mini Jasper in
That's so funny that I just realized that I wrote Indra comes in with young Jasper in a wheelchair, not a wheelbarrow.
Yeah,
that was earlier. I wrote syringe instead of sky ring.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I was on one. All right, sorry.
So interesting, bringing in Mini Jasper in a wheelbarrow, bringing them into the workshop. Yeah. So he's going into the bunker with Maddie and the rest of the, what would you even refer to that group as?
The
refugees?
Yes, refugees is good. Okay, she goes, you got any weapons? He says, does a nuclear reactor count? it's the all-time weapon.
Yeah. Murphy's just always fucking on, man. No matter what's happening.
Must be exhausting to be that
good.
Okay,
so we have Jerry proud of Murphy. We have Amore proud of Murphy. And as she's leaving, we have Indra's proud of Murphy.
That was a rare just stop and saying, hey, Murphy, I'm proud of you.
I said while we were watching the episode, I said I would kill to have Indra tell me she was proud of me. And then I followed that up with she would probably be proud that I kill.
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's awesome. I didn't hear you say that.
Everyone's proud of Murphy.
I mean, Murphy was just killing it with the one-liners in this episode, man.
Truly.
Because they're like, Indra comes in and it's like, do you have anywhere to put him and house him? And he's like, we might know a place. Like, they're sitting on top of all the people they're currently hiding. Yeah.
So Amore takes baby Jasper back to the nuclear reactor room. And I like this little bit that Amore tells Maddie. She says, yesterday he lost his biological parents and today his people were killed. And I like that because it's just a good reminder of timeline, because we go back and forth. It's like, okay, literally yesterday was that Children of Gabriel like killing everybody. Like it was three episodes ago or two. It doesn't seem like yesterday to me. Yeah. So I like when they drop the writers drop those little hints, being like, okay, that was
like a month and a half for us, like real people.
Yes, exactly.
And let me complain for like a hot second about for a completely different reason. So when Amori does tell Maddie, she's like, Maddie says, I think like, what should my job be or whatever? And
how can I help him?
Yeah. How can I help? And she says, just be Mini Jasper's friend. Does he have a name?
Luca.
Luca. Just be Luca's friend, whatever. I think we kind of brought this up probably four or five episodes ago. So now I think it's warranted to bring it back up again. Like besides the final endpoint of where Maddie's going to end up with, like it, to me, it just does not feel like she has any relevance. They kind of just give her lines to give her lines. Like,
It's exactly the Jordan and Hope thing where they say, we don't have any friends. We don't have any friends. We don't have anyone that we are connected to besides Hope at Dio's and Octavia. So anytime they're in a scene together, it's like, little one, you felt the heartstrings. Jordan doesn't have anybody that makes me feel heartstrings besides now Hope. Maddie only has that with Clark, and Clark's MIA.
Yeah, okay, I'll give it to you that. We could look back when the series is done where she ends up as this was like kind of important to where it's leading for her. But on the journey, man, I think Maddie's storyline has really sucked out loud.
She used to be Clark's child who was a commander, had the flame Nightblood. She used to be very special. They removed the flame from her, so she's no longer a commander.
She doesn't have that connection.
Clark
anymore,
isn't here anymore physically. Like, what makes her quote-unquote special in the context of this show? And it's unfortunately not that much. She's just a kid.
Jackson's more important, and he's not even in like these scenes, you know? Yeah. Like, Jackson's...
Well, when they brought in Maddie, when Maddie was a big new character in season 5, I remember thinking, wow, this is going to change Clark completely. She is now a mother figure. This is going to completely change her. And of course it did. Season 5 entire arc for Clark was making crazy decisions
against
her friends.
The only low
for
point
Maddie.
I think of Clark's entire
series.
I agree,
but you can't blame her because of course she knows she watched Lexa, the love of her life, die because of the flame.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, Maddie had to take the flame. But having season 7 as this, we no longer have that mother-daughter dynamic because they're just on different planets. Like, it's tough. It's like, tough to see the importance of Maddie without
Clark.
They're
just like, I think you said it during the rewatch, Kathleen. I think you, like you said, it's building up to basically where when this is all over, Maddie could be the potential future leader.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, hindsight, this might, all of Maddie's journey might make sense, but throughout the journey, man, I'm not enjoying Maddie's scenes at all.
Yeah, this is the first episode, though, where we've seen her take on that kind of leadership role amongst the younger kids, though. Yes. She kind of like, we get to that scene later. So Nikki knocks on the door, says, hey, Indra told me that you can, you know, hide
save
me.
Murphy ain't
hide
no
me.
Fool. He grabs a crowbar immediately.
Yeah.
He brought a crowbar to a gunfight.
Did he see her face on a screen before he did that? Or
he just knew it sounded fishy. Yeah. Nobody would knock on the door and yell into the night. Indra told me you could rescue me.
No, then...
they only see Russ.
They only see Russ, yeah. Maybe Amori sees Nikki, but...
Amori does see Nikki, which Amori explains why she's there.
Exactly. But even more so when Murphy... So Nikki comes in, puts a gun to him, threatens to shoot him in the leg. And so Murphy goes to type in the code, but mid-code looks up into the camera and takes a beat and is staring, knowing that Amori's probably watching.
Yeah.
And that's even the bigger tell that Amori has to get ready to bang, bang her on the head.
Yeah, great, great Amori scene.
That had to be intentional. I was like, stop it.
So Nikki walks in. She's like, she's super hyped to see all these refugees. And then she sees Maddie, says jackpot, thinking she's in there. And then that's when Amori kind of bops.
Yeah, Nikki bang, bang goes night, night.
Yeah.
No? Okay.
We could take
was that a courtesy laugh? I'll take it either
way. That was real, and I'm pissed I did it so close to the mic.
So the next scene we get is Nikki bang 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 tied up in the bunker. She's just like kind of roped up against the pipes that Hatch and Murphy were working on earlier in the season. So
great location for this speech too.
Yeah,
the
right.
Perfect location.
It's a good location just for the refugee bunker, honestly. But anyway, he starts playing the Hatch card to Nikki, saying, do you think that Hatch would have kneeled? Yeah, he probably would have, but he wouldn't have done the work.
Yeah, he wouldn't have actually gone about coming in here trying to kill a little kid. I mean, he didn't say that in so many words.
Yeah.
And then he starts pointing out the patch they actually did together. And I love he's like Raven in one of her more questionable choices.
That was literally one of my favorite lines Murphy has almost ever given. I got it.
Go ahead.
So I was just so happy with the line. He says, and Raven in one of her more questionable moments that I nevertheless respect.
Yes.
And I was like, hell yes, Murphy, because it just fits with how every single survivor cockroach thing decision Murphy has made in the past. He understands
he gets it.
He 100% understands it. Fucking great moment. Murphy, how is Murphy not everybody's favorite fucking
character? I think
he is. He might be. Richard Harmon is the best.
He is so charming.
Yes.
Yeah, he's skyrocketing up the ranks.
He does is
what?
Charming.
He hasn't already been
I'm just saying, like, if he's not number one, then he's got to be close to be up there.
The writers are just putting 99% of their work into his one-liners, and then 1% is everybody else's dialogue.
Dude.
Well, they just know that Richard will be able to just deliver it with finesse.
Yeah, boy, does
absolute
he.
Finesse. Dude,
okay, so he gives that perfectly, I don't know if it was scripted or planned with Amori or whatever, but he gives that whole speech to Nikki, ending with, like, you know,
when this is all over, we'll drink to him in the tavern.
Exactly.
And then we get Amori just clapping in the back.
She's wet again for like the fifth time this
episode. Yeah, because she's like, let's go finish what we started, bitch.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's no way they're banging right now. You got so many like injured, fucking scarred people. Don't just go.
God, I could
have business to attend to.
Yeah, more
they need to treat themselves.
I love it.
So I think
here's my thing. I was shook that she was just agreeing because he was like, Murphy laid it down. He's like, if you don't shut up, I'm putting you in the room and you're going to basically melt, and then Hatch's sacrifice will be for nothing. So is that what you want? Because he says Hatch, Raven didn't think Hatch would keep going knowing he was going to die, but he did. And you know why? Because he told me he's doing it for you. Do you want to just take that sacrifice and throw it out the fucking window? It's an epic speech. Mm-hmm. Like, really good. Was Nikki believing him? Like,
no.
Was Nikki? No, she was just like, mm-hmm. Like,
I thought that was the point of them at the end of the scene showing when
she's doing something with her wrist.
Yeah, and Brian brought it up, and he was like, oh, I hope she doesn't break out of that, because that would have been shitty writing.
That was bizarre that they showed her trying to struggle out.
But I think that's the reason. The reason they showed her struggling is saying, like, she doesn't care.
She's not buying in.
She's like, I'm still trying to get out of here.
Yeah, but I was like, wow, is she buying this? I mean, great speech, but Nikki Bang Bang, I don't think anyone
she seems irredeemable now.
Yeah,
I mean, she's seen Hatch's patch, wink wink, and that wasn't even enough to convince her. That speech was super well done by Murphy, and she's still trying to break out.
And I kind of think it makes sense. I didn't think she was gonna get redeemed or anything. I think she was gonna go out like this. So
we get another bunker scene, but in the middle of the bunker scenes, there's a palace scene.
Yes.
So in the palace, Indra is cleaning up the blood, and Russ immediately tells Indra, get up. You shouldn't be cleaning the blood. And she says, you told Tree Crew to clean the blood.
I am
Tree Crew. I was just like, okay, Indra, we get it. You're the best character. Whatever. It's cool.
True.
Knight made Russ Haida a bone throne, and it was awesome.
It's so dope. Cool.
They definitely made that out of that room in the palace that just has the skeletons, right?
Oh, yeah. It was all the prime. No, all the old primes that
all
they
the
had.
All the old primes that just leave their skeletons. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that room?
Yep.
They definitely made the throne out of that.
If they needed more bones, I mean, the faithful were all dead as well.
They had a surplus of bones. Yeah. Bones were not available.
It was an epically uncomfortable looking throne.
Oh my God, he had
super
to lean
badass.
Back so
you know that he's
far.
Like, when is this ending? When is this ending? Like,
I really like the armrests, how they were just arms.
Yeah.
It was an awesome scene. Yeah. It was really
super
cool.
Nice. Yeah.
Very literal. Like, right on the nose.
Yeah, that was good though. I liked it.
Yeah. All right,
and let's talk about this scene, because I was mind blown by this scene when the next thing you see is the grounders. I mean, grounders. Yeah, grounders.
Yeah.
Walking in with basically like a tree. In like kind of going through the slits of the stone of the anomaly stone and them carrying it, because so my first thought was, I thought this thing was like 1,000 fucking pounds.
I mean, it shows it breaking the thing they put it on.
Yeah.
I thought it was either something crazy, I don't know, something there.
That's
so that
basic
was my
survival ingenuity, right?
Grounders
there.
Be strong,
but it also makes sense in context of the other planets and what we've seen with the stones, because I just assumed, and maybe obviously wrong now, is that Like, do you know how like the Bardo stone room is set up around the stone? I thought like the stone would have been there first and they built the stone room around it.
No, because Bill himself brought the stone on Earth from, what's it called?
Machu Picchu.
Machu Picchu.
Machu
yeah.
Picchu. Is that was it?
Machu Picchu.
Did they say
Machu Picchu?
I'm drinking. Sorry.
It's the Joe
did they? Yeah, they yeah. said he found the stone there. Yes. I thought
at
he found
the
carvings
Machu
there.
Or something.
No, he found the stone. No.
Oh, I missed that.
And he brought it all the way to totally DC.
I thought they found like a sun room, and they found the stone and like engravings that showed them one of the codes. I forget
something
what
that
code
like
that, was good for, but they found. But they found the stone in the same place as that engraving.
See,
okay,
I thought it was they found the engravings there, and then they built the bunker around the stone, which was dumb. And it makes sense now.
Yeah.
It also makes even more sense when you're thinking about Nakara with the stone being inside the big inside the big monster. Yeah. Exactly. Also, I was like, how did it even end up there? But now it makes way more sense.
The compound in Bardo is underground too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So it makes sense that they
So what
it
this
down
proved
there.
Was that the stone is movable.
Yes.
And that was
and I like
that
it.
Built
I
some
like
holes.
It
and yeah. you're right, it is 100%. A bajillion pounds.
And it sets up the end of the episode being epic as fuck.
Also crazy to think how did the stone get on top of the mountain in Etheria, but that's not something we're ever gonna know.
Could have just been there.
Sure.
You're right. Bill also it. Exist as a thing. Someone it
Bill climbed the mountain with
yes,
it.
Yes, like it does exist. So any of the stones could be where it originally was, but they are movable.
Yeah. Also, speaking of Etheria, I just thought that Bellamy 100% was a simulation. He's going to find out it was a simulation and be completely against the disciples. I just wanted to vent that. That's how it's going to happen.
Right.
Welcome, brother.
I was going to say that, too. Welcome. That once...
Notice me, senpai.
Oh, I've noticed you. I fucking noticed you.
I think exactly the same thing, that the minute Bellamy realizes it's a simulation, which is what will change him. It can't possibly be it's
we
not
so
a simulation and he changes back. No, yeah. I agree with you. It can't. It's not going to be. Yeah. It's got to be a simulation if we're changing him back.
So.
You're
I
preaching to the choir, baby girl.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know.
Okay. We're not the ones you got to convince.
Brian is not in our choir.
No, that just admitted. Oh, dude, I just got it. That just clicked with
sing
me.
Sing something,
how that
then.
Was. I just sang.
Yeah. He just noticed me, senpai. He's on our team.
He just noticed me, senpai. All right, hold on.
What more do you want me to do?
We're done with that. Right? We do not need to go
knees.
Down the Bellamy rabbit hole
we're
again.
We're freaking done.
We don't.
So the last thing we get in the stone room scene is Knight. Indra overhearing Knight tell Shade Hada, luckily I had someone follow Nikki.
Yeah.
That was...
Dun, dun, dun.
Knight is a good right hand man for
still
Shade
a bitch,
Hada.
Though.
Hate him.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
and now we're going to transition to... This is what we were going to get. Okay. Kyle, I think you were getting into this. You can take us through the... Or someone was talking about Maddie.
This was me
mistakenly. This is the real Maddie stuff.
And it followed afterwards when we first get Maddie and Mini Jasper arriving in the nuclear reactor. But so we get the kids table, basically. So Maddie, Mini Jasper, Mini Monty's there as well, I believe. And then a fourth child. And Maddie is offering Mini Jasper some food, some bread. He won't take it. So then Mini Monty...
Because he's scarred to death.
Yeah, Mini Monty's trying to...
frazzled right now.
Yeah, he's trying to grub.
I guess we should call him by his real name, Luca. He has a name.
Okay, Luca.
I like know, me too.
So, fine. Luca refuses to eat, and Maddie says, fine, if you don't eat, we won't eat. So she's joining him in the hunger strike. And then she basically drops her whole life story, the beginning of her life, rather, how she hadn't eaten in weeks after Prime Fire, and that how everyone in her family... had died, everyone she knew died, and she was alone for 58 days.
Which I love. I love that little piece of information because we don't know. All we knew is she was a little like feral child running around catching Clark in a bear trap. Like, no!
I can't wait to get to that part. In,
it's great. Like, it's a great
the
episode.
Intro to Maddie in my rewatch because, Jesus, I don't even remember.
The one question I have about this is that we've been kind of complaining very vocally about Maddie's storyline like we've already done in this episode. And she's like, basically her whole deal is that she's kind of emotionally scarred because of being the commander and all of the duties and the Shade Hada stuff. But don't you think that the post-Prime Fire era of her life was worse than that?
I think it's just been downhill.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all combined together.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But so
it
yeah,
like that would have fucked me up more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all. But she got. I think we're forgetting again. She got 6 years with Clark with a mother figure to like love her back to health.
That's a good point.
And she says that. She said Clark helped me through it, which I like. And then the.
And she's going to be Minnie Jasper's Clark and helped him through it.
Yeah, baby. Anyway, so then we move forward. And I like the scene for Maddie. I like this is what prompted me to say what Luke said earlier, that she is kind of like mentoring these kids and know she's been through some shit. So she knows what to say and she's acting like a leader. And then we cut to Murphy with his cute little line to Amori being like, I wish I knew you as a kid. I was like, oh, you're kidding.
And then she's like, let's bang.
Yeah, that's when she says, let's bang. I then, skipped to it.
And then, yeah, right. As they're about to bang, they see on the video camera, Shade Hayda and all of, what do we even call them? Because they're not one crew.
Sengeta crew.
But they're really more than
I would say they're the Grounders.
Yeah, the Grounders.
His faction is the Grounders now.
It includes Tree Crew. It includes
Intra. Yeah, Intra is a subordinate.
Yeah, we're back to saying Grounders and Refugees. So that's who's on Sengeta.
That makes sense. The Grounders and Shade Hayda show up at the door. And let me say, this is my, besides that Raven line yet earlier, which is my favorite line of Murphy's, this is my favorite back and forth of Murphy when he just absolutely slay. Okay, so first he tells Amori, like, you know, I'm going to go do this. You lock this door. Make sure that you don't.
Love this.
You
he's
don't
a hero.
Ever open this door up. And she's like, well, what if he like decides to, you know, like be super aggressive? And he's like, at least you're going to be on the right side of the wall.
She says, you're going to be on the wrong side of the door. And he goes, well, you'll be on the right side.
Yeah.
He also, she's like, what are you going to tell him? He's like, we got in a fight. You went on a walk.
And
that's it.
He's
like, what do you mean?
That's the part I was going to say.
He says, I'll sell it well. Don't worry. She's like, what if you don't? He's like, come on. Murphy.
And dude, that's the part that I was just like, wow, this is awesome.
You're not Amori.
Goddamn, Richard. Yeah. He unbuttons
the shirt,
ready to hook up as soon as she walks through the door. And he just sells the shit out of that scene.
You would think he's acting.
He's Murphy. He's not Richard Harmon, but John Murphy is a goddamn good actor.
Yeah. And also, I thought you were going to say this when you were about to. When you were lining up that line, but they fucking see Russ Hayda and the squad and the Grounders at the door through the camera. And Murphy looks at Amori and is like, do you think they had engine trouble?
If anybody else said it, we'd be like corny, stupid. Yeah. But when Murphy
said it,
like,
it was
nice.
Hilarious.
It's always good when Murphy says it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Amori hits him with the, hey, Cyclops.
Yeah.
Love that.
Well, Injure, right when they start walking through, says he knows. He's like, I figured. Like, yeah. What else is new?
Which is like crazy that Indra has the trust to be able to even do that without people being like, yo, Shade. Yo, Shade Hayda.
Yo, Shade.
Like, she's kind of not on her side.
Yeah.
You know?
She's divulging all the secrets.
Yeah. So he busts in. Murphy's trying to play it off like, oh, I don't have anybody. And then Amori says, hey, Cyclops. And she pitches the like, listen, if anything happens to John, I blow the reactor. If you come in here, I blow the reactor. And John hits him with the, everyone in there basically has nothing to live for. Like, this is their final go. They have nothing to live for. So
and says, the way he delivers it is so good. When he said, when I think it's Knight that says, Knight says,
they're bluffing. Yeah,
they're bluffing. He goes, are they?
Yeah.
And he kind of like starts talking
like,
about
everyone
it.
Knows they're dead. They have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I believe so in chess, we call that a stalemate.
Yep.
Love it. Love the chess references. Yeah. We're a bunch of chess ass dorks here. Well, at least me and Luke are.
When Russ Hayda counterpunches with his own chess reference and basically takes Murphy hostage and says with a very emphatic emphasis, King takes knight.
It's crazy the way he says
an emphatic emphasis.
Oh, true. I had emphatic there, and I was like, I don't think it looks
right.
It's
just the same word.
Yeah,
emphasis. Is that what emphatic means?
I was trying to be emphatic about his emphatic King takes knight.
Did anyone else but me? My last note of this scene was, thank God Murphy lived, because I was a little bit worried that they were going to kill him this scene.
I was not worried.
Not, I mean,
if it happened, I would have died.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I was not expecting it
so
at
you
all.
Did? You thought there was a little bit of a chance this could have been.
I didn't think so, but yeah. Russ Hayda is a
King
bad MF-er. He could have just
could
been
kill
like,
anybody.
All right.
100% agree, which makes him such a good character.
But Amori did give
enough
him
to
the
save
ultimatum.
It. Yes,
like,
yes.
Russ Hayda does not want to die.
My personal final note was Murphy is a knight now with a bunch of exclamation points. Is he going to become a king with a bunch of question marks? And then I said, what chess piece was he in the early seasons? A pawn, probably.
When he's getting hanged at the noose, he was a pawn.
Yeah, true.
Sure.
No, he got hung by the noose, he was still not. I mean, he was a bad person, but he did nothing wrong.
Let me just pitch this to you.
I'm just saying he was a pawn.
Let me ask you a question, my friend.
Yeah, 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 right, you're right. Go ahead.
If somebody took a gun and shot Shade Hayda in the head in any scene, like just like,
yeah, go ahead,
whatever. What do you think? What does everybody do? Like, what do the Grounders do if Indra finds
Knight,
a gun and shoots
Knight
him?
Might take the reign for the short term until another Indra
challenges him to a conclave.
I think
whoops his
all
ass
of
again,
those Grounders are pawns, for lack of a better word. They will follow whoever says, I'm the leader now, bitch.
Yeah,
like, Indra literally did that. Indra beat the shit out of Knight and was like, I'm the captain now.
I think that
it's like, just kill Shane and I'm scared.
Yeah, I think they would have to kill Sangeta crew, like Knight and them, because I don't think Knight would go back to the way things were before Shane hated. But I think everyone else would just be like, okay.
Literally, Titus killed Lexa, and then everyone's like, okay, who's the new one? Little kid, Aiden, he's going to be our
true.
New,
what about a game changer if goddamn Antara didn't show up?
I know, exactly. All Aiden right. was going to, the 13 clans.
So
are we ready to jump back to Bardo, which is going to lead us to the final scene? We're done with the Sanctum, right?
Yeah. So in Bardo, we go to the Stone Room, and all of Clark and company are in handcuffs. They're restrained in single file line.
Epic characters.
Yeah. I know. You know, they're like, hey, before, like, I love that. They never get to be all in one room.
Is that the first time Clark and Hope are in the same room?
I mean, they.
No.
Hope introed like two episodes ago when Hope walks in.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. You're right. But yeah.
So.
And literally when she kills Anders.
The agreement, once again, was Clark agreed to take them to the flame, which she knows where she buried it, in exchange for the safety of her friends. So one by one, they are given helmets by the disciples. So their memory is going to be good. By the conductor specifically, they are given helmets, and one by one, they are released from their restraints because, and who says a comment like, why do we have to be restrained?
Oh.
No, Clark is like, why are you restrained? And then they start unrestraining them to go. Mm-hmm. Echo's the one who says, sending all your fighters in first, huh? Like, because.
Oh, and I paid more attention to that the second rewatch because I knew that was coming.
Exactly.
And they had Hope go. Hope was one of the first people. Octavius was one of the first people. Echo herself was one of the first people.
And then Jordan Nyland Miller. Miller was the first.
Miller was another fighter that she considered. Yeah, so was Nyla considered a fighter?
Shouldn't be.
Yeah. And then the end was obviously like Gabriel Raven, which were not, and Clark were not considered fighters, which is just cool, kind of the breakdown of that statement, because it was obviously
Gabriel Raven and Clark don't go with that crew anyway.
Right. And Echo thought it was because they were keeping the smart people but weak fighters to go last.
I was more trying to highlight, like, someone brings that up, like, why are we restrained going one at a time? And Bill says, well, you have killed dozens of my people, so like, you can't be too careful. And it's he's got a point.
I actually really like this line. I don't have it written down, so I might botch it, but he's like, I don't trust you, Clark, but I trust the love you have for your friends, which is the theme of the entire
show. The exact quote.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, you fucking nailed that.
Yeah.
She's only saw the episode three times.
I did watch it three times.
Speaking of quotes, I don't have the exact Miller line, but it's the only line he had this entire episode. And that's kind of sad.
What was the content? I don't remember.
Before Echo says something, he says something, because he's first in line. He has an offhand.
Does he? I don't even remember.
It might be like six words, maybe. I think.
It's upsetting. I love Miller.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It kind of stinks.
So we get Raven saying immediately they didn't go to Sanctum. Where do you think they sent them?
Yeah.
I love that. I was like, where?
Earth. Yeah, but what is there? Is Earth confirmed safe by anybody?
It's a new show. Okay. It's called
it's been
The Six.
Years.
Let's talk about real quickly.
Nothing? Nobody?
Yeah, because like what I don't think you listened to the last episode we recorded, but the whole thing was that we thought Gaia was sent to Earth.
Yeah.
Because someone brought it up that
Jimmy did.
If the Earth In the title sequence, if you see, Earth now looks different than when it did when it was offline.
Really?
Don't know if it was if it's by design or not. Also, Gaia means Earth. Like, Gaia means Earth. So some people think that whoever was in the suit plus Gaia could be the Adam and Eve version of restarting the Earth society.
I only listened to half of the last episode. Yeah. Did we speculate about who was in the suit?
Because we thought it was Bellamy.
Yeah.
It's obviously not.
It's got to be like an unnamed.
Yeah, we ran out of named characters.
We couldn't think of anybody. Trey, just kidding.
Oh my God.
I'm joking.
That's like when Kai was like, Bellamy's the shepherd. Like, no, what?
He's acting very shepherd-like right now.
Yeah, it was you.
It was definitely me, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean.
So we can cross off the table. Like, it's not a possibility. I mean, maybe it is, but Penance is probably not where they were sent.
They're all going to be different ages.
That's what I was
they went
bring
one
out.
By one. Yes. I'm so upset. We need to go back
it's
to our early episodes had a diagram of which way the anomaly stones were, which, like, you know, when we had everything drawn out, which one for a slower time dilation.
Bill, I don't think he's a liar, and he did assure Clark and Raven that they were safe wherever they were. And I don't think sending them to penance.
The car is so boring.
To age like 20 years would be anyone's definition of safe. And that would be messed up. I think they're going somewhere where they are safe.
It can't be Alpha. It can't be Alpha either, because we see at the end of the episode it's not.
Alpha's Sanctum.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It can't be there. Yeah. So it's not the whole point. It's not Alpha. Not Sanctum. Yeah, duh. So it's not
Wouldn't
Penance.
Wouldn't be Beta. Isn't Bardo, obviously. Could be Earth, Nakara, Etheria.
Yes, those are the three options.
Dude, if it's Etheria or Nakara...
Listen,
Nakara would
Earth
suck.
Earth might be kind of cool.
Why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he do Etheria though to force them to do the pilgrimage?
It could be.
Ooh,
could
that's
be.
A good
it's
one.
On the table
to go.
I mean,
into
they
the
don't
simulation.
Really have to. They could just suck them up via their code, but I guess they don't have their code.
And nothing in the trailer gives away anything with these characters, nope. So we don't know.
We probably won't see these characters next episode.
No.
Yeah, they're gonna hold those cards closed.
Honestly,
finish it, then we can talk about the game.
Okay, so our two factions are Echo, Nyla, Jordan, Miller, Hope, and Octavia. They got sent to God knows where. But
damn, Octavia does not feel like she fits in that group.
She's gonna kill it though. Clark, Raven, Bill, Gabriel, Bellamy, and the conductor are the leftovers who get sent somewhere else. Where do they go, Luke?
They end up in the throne room right next to the, what do we call it? The skull. What do you call it?
The bone throne.
Hell yes.
That just wrote itself.
Hell
come on
yes, man.
And their faces when this is happening, because Shade Hata has no idea. He's never seen the anomaly. I mean,
that's not true. He's seen the, well, he's never seen it work.
No,
in
he's
life,
never seen the green gigantic.
He's going to make that connection, I think, immediately.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't think he's going to be that shocked.
The grounders are going to be like, duh, what the?
Yeah, they will.
They're
but
like
I mean, he opens when he says, "I've seen this before." It's open in Maddie's book to the page of the anomaly.
Yeah,
and it's also more than like it's hard to. It's. I think it should be a thing that like what Maddie and Shade had to see in their head from past commanders. Like while they're drawing it in his head, he probably saw the green vortex.
Also, where did we land on? Does Shade Hata have Russell Prime's memories? I thought we landed on yes. He probably
no. The
does.
Answer is no. I believe anything he learned is from being in Maddie's head or in Russ's head for that tiny baby amount.
Which he gained a little bit of a knowledge to the point where he knew what like primes were and all that.
I was just going to say, because it was established that Russell Prime spent the majority of his life trying to understand the anomaly. So
I don't think he took all of his memories.
I was just trying to
what I meant by that is that everyone in that room hasn't seen the anomaly with their own eyes, whether they have it from a memory of a past human in
no one has a chip. Yeah.
I just mean that everyone's going to be like, what in God's name is that?
And Clark doesn't care.
Clark shows
Clark.
Up, takes off the helmet, and Murphy's smile.
Yeah, the second rewatch, I noticed it. Murphy turns and gives a little fucking, like, smirk.
Well, earlier in the episode, he says to Amori, waiting for our friends to come save us is not a plan. And I love that Murphy or Clark just pops in and he's like, yes.
That's because Murphy knows he shouldn't be the hero of the story.
Yeah.
He wants to be the cockroach. And he's just like, all we can do is wait for Clark to come and save the day. And now he knows Clark's here.
Let's just talk about this, because the weight of this is hard to grasp in like the momentum of the episode. But when Clark pulls up to Sanctum in the middle of the throne room and takes off her helmet and says, what the hell happened here? And Murphy says, gee, where to begin? The weight of that is only really going to be realized by people who binge the show.
Yeah.
Because so much goddamn time has passed for everybody that wasn't on Alpha. And like how, when Clark was last there, I think who was Maddie still the commander when Clark was last on Sanctum?
She was a fake commander.
The fake commander. But like she thought, like, I'm coming back. And even from her perspective, if she knew I'm coming back 4 days later, nothing should have changed.
Yeah.
Compared to her coming back with the bone throne, one eyed Russ Hata.
Yeah,
in
because
the...
she has no idea that's even Shade Hata. She has no idea that that's Shade Hata.
Sanctum's got turned upside down in the past like 3 days.
3 or 4 days max. Like, Jesus. It's so epic. And like, I don't know. This season, I feel like when it's done, as long as it ends right, is going to be so good.
I just like that earlier, a few episodes ago, Octavia says to Clark, I knew you'd show up eventually. And same with Murphy's, like that smile and saying, waiting for our friends to show up and save
Clark
the day.
Clark is the main character.
She's
and they
the key,
all know
baby.
Yeah.
She is the key.
Clark's the best.
I have something I need to say.
Someone think
I got to get something off of my chest.
Go for it.
A la Jimmy. So I had to just come out and swallow this L. So I've been saying multiple times, I guess, throughout the season of like, how the hell are these two storylines going to merge together? Like, what are they going to do? While the flame has been buried in the dirt on Alpha the entire time, which is just like painfully obvious that that's how they were going to merge the storylines.
I don't know if it's painfully obvious because I thought that there's no bringing it back. So I don't blame
it happened and they were like, oh, it's in the dirt. Let's go get it. And I was like, damn.
I did not think that was so simple. Maybe I'm tooting my own horn for nothing, but I got to go back and re-listen to our episode 1 and 2 of the podcast because I feel like I brought up the point, like, is the flame actually out of it? And you guys were just like, yeah, it's done. It's toast, it is. It's buried.
Well, I don't know.
From the context of when you were asking if it's actually broken, it 100% is.
Well, we all knew it was broken. That's why it was getting buried.
I know for a fact the only thing I said is, are Clark and Guy going to kiss?
Oh, yeah. Well, you were asking the important question.
Yeah, exactly. That is so true. You thought that
they still could.
If Guy was actually in the season, then it might have.
They could have been we thought for a second they could have been the parents.
Guy is a hot girl.
All right. What would that ship be? Glark or Kaya?
I'm partial to Kaya because it sounds kind of like my name, Kaya.
It would have to be Clia because Kaya sounds way too similar. You got to give the L.
All right. Fair enough. Real quick, though, I think it's warranted to talk about the trailer because it's only 10 seconds and it actually gives us some information. So when Clark shows up and takes her helmet off in the throne room, no one else takes their helmet off. And that's cool because that they all have helmets because of the time dilation. Thank God they're consistent with that. So there's 4 people wearing disciple uniforms and then 2 not, being Raven and Clark. And Brian, I think already laid it out, but it wasn't confirmed until you see the trailer of who some of those people are. So we know for a fact that Bill is there. I thought initially before I saw the trailer that Bill was not going to be one to go to Alpha himself, but he obviously is after we see the next trailer. I think we see
all we see at the end of this episode is 4 people in white robes.
Yep.
1 person in regular garb, and then Clark takes her helmet off. So we made the assumption that it was Clark, Raven as the 2 people in regular clothes, mm-hmm. and the 4 people that were robed were the conductor, Bellamy, Bill,
and Gabriel. Yeah.
Which we got Clark and Bill confirmed. The other 4
and
people,
Raven. I mean, because Raven's the only other person.
It's those 6.
It's them.
Yeah.
Who the hell else would it be? They're gonna. We would have
totally paid for Clark to be on set that day. That's why. Yeah.
Well, we would have totally spent time talking about if Bill was there or not if we didn't see the trailer. So,
I would have. I mean, I thought it was Bill 100%.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like
Bill.
But
at the same time,
he's standing there with his arms in his little clasp. That is a classic call me Bill pose.
At the same time, that's a very risky play for Bill. If he's the shepherd, to be out of cry, he's alive, walking amongst the living, and he knows that Clark is a dangerous motherfucker. Yes.
He literally says in the preview.
For him, go ahead.
He says, I want to be on this moon for as little time as possible. Like he knows he's in danger. Like,
which is a spoiler in itself because I assume the second the next episode picked up, how are they in the throne room and Shade Hay doesn't say put all of them like in cuffs right now? And obviously Bill seems comfortable when he delivers that line you just said, Kathleen. So something's going to happen where he actually has leverage and control.
I speculate that Shade Hay is going to be gravitated towards Bill's knowledge of the anomaly. Shade Hay, because he has these visions of the spiral patterns all in his head. If Bill can shed some light on that situation and tell him this is a very, very, very powerful thing, he'll probably recruit him to fight in the last war.
So you see Shade Hay becoming a subordinate of Bill?
No. Shade Hay ain't nobody's subordinate. I'm saying that's what Bill's going to try to do. And I think Shade Hay is smart enough to realize that if he kills Bill, then he is going to have all of Bardo up his ass. And Bardo would defeat.
He would only know that if he gets a conversation in with him because he doesn't know what Bardo is, right?
Which, like, I think he will.
Yeah, yeah. Bill's the most socially manipulative person of the series in such a good, positive villain way.
I think one way to answer both of those questions of why, like, Bill would take the risk and how they get out so easily would just be the classic, like, they have 7 invisible people with them.
Could be, but I don't know if they're going to flaunt themselves like that.
I wouldn't like it. Because I'm not a fan of the invisible people constantly popping up and being a thing. But, I mean, that could easily explain it.
Yeah. All right, I think we can.
I think it was a good episode.
Yeah, that was fun to talk about, to be honest.
We laughed.
There was a lot. I feel like this was one where they tied up a lot of loose ends. You know, they
started to connect a little
bit. Overpaved some holes. And, yeah, we have the convergence of Murphy, Bardo and Sanctum.
finally, which I think we've wanted these characters to reconverge for a while.
For a long time.
It's good.
Okay, Ben Kill Mary, this theme is supporting actor boys. The three are Jackson, Miller, and Jordan.
I like it. I like it. I like it.
Okay, I can start. I am going to marry Jackson.
Love that.
Because we interviewed him. It was awesome. No, no. Jackson is, first of all, he's got the most useful knowledge, skill base. Great person, great morals, handsome, the man. I would love to marry Jackson. I'm going to bang Miller because Miller's awesome. I feel like he's one of the most fun characters, would be one of the most fun characters to actually hang out with on the set. And yeah, he's great. And Jordan, while he's been had a turnaround since he's been Bardo Jordan, I'm still not ready to say I love the guy. So I'm going to kill, unfortunately, Monty and Harper's son.
I'm going to go next because I have the same. I feel like all four of us are going to have the same answer. Jackson's going to get married. Yes, the skill set. Plus, he's just a nice guy. He watches over Maddie, so you know he's good with kids. Like, he therapist, Dr. Jackson. Yeah, I'll marry him. Good guy. I will also bang Miller just because he's been steady killing it since season one. Good moral compass. You know, he can fight. He's a good dude. Has some great one-liners, and he's had more layers added to him this season and last season. I can bang him for sure. And I'll kill Jordan, yes. While I have probably been his biggest proponent thus far, he's going up against two solidified characters since season one. He can't make up that kind of ground. Jordan's getting the axe.
I was really trying to not put Jordan in, but I like to do a theme.
Yeah.
I didn't want to just throw in someone random.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm saying exactly the same thing. No new information. I mean, it's actually pretty close between Jackson and Miller because I really
I almost married.
Yeah, that's what I was going.
I almost married Miller.
It's more on the like bang side than I'm like Miller. But of course, when you marry them, you get to bang them all the time too.
I said a bang. Bang.
Bangity bang. I said a bang, bang, bangity bang.
A Nicky bang, bang.
Oh.
That was good.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kyle, you got anything different?
In a different scenario, Jordan might have a leg to stand on, but you got to kill him. It sucks. Sorry, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to say that I would marry Miller and not marry Jackson, but I would marry Jackson, bang Miller, kill Jordan.
Same reasons.
Dang, yeah, I thought you were going to bang Jordan for some reason, because I know you've been hot on him these last couple episodes.
Yeah. Also, Kyle banged Cadigan in an earlier episode in the prequel app. He banged
the
Cadigan.
Pillow talk.
Honestly, Jordan is probably a way better pillow talker than Miller.
Miller's seen some shit.
Jordan knows five people.
I know, but he's got that weird wisdom. He's a zen.
He has
zen
no
boy.
Social skills.
I don't know. I really, for the record, in this episode.
For the record, you had 20 seconds ago, you could have just banged him.
No, I don't want to. I'm just saying. All I wanted to say was, I mean, in real life, though, Shannon Cook is a snack. But I want to say, I just want to reiterate that I really loved that Hope and Jordan scene. I think that was fucking excellent.
Yeah, easily my favorite Jordan scene of the entire series.
Yeah, but more like Shelby just blew me away. I was like, that is such great acting. The fact that it's her first job out of school.
She's been great all season.
Yeah, she really has. Yeah.
That's going to conclude Bang Kill Mary. And as we all know, that's going to conclude the podcast episode. We're going to be continuing to cover the 100 all season long. We have a 2-week hiatus following episode 12, but do not worry, because we'll be back before you know it with episode 13 entitled Blood Giant. If you're looking for more of the 100 content in the meantime, make sure to go back and listen to our episodes interviewing Chad Rook, Jason Diaz, and Sachin Sahil, who play Hatch, Levitt, and Jackson, respectively. They're great interviews. They were great guys. Give them a listen. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
Love you guys.
Woo!